The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com.
And hello again, wrestling fans. Welcome to another edition of This Week in History. This episode, we're going to look at the week of May 27th through to June 2nd. Now, I want to thank you for joining us on Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, anywhere else you get your podcasts from. I also want to let you know that we're visually available on Rumble, YouTube, and Facebook, and we can't go without acknowledging our other sponsor, Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, bringing back the golden age of wrestling. And we are proud to be partnering up with Jobsite Brewing in Stratford, Ontario, to bring you great wrestling action. Tickets are just $20 and available at Jobsite Brewing. And bring your friends, bring your family. And this show is family friendly, and it's happening Saturday, July 9th. So you won't want to miss our next show whenever we come to your town. In this case, we're coming to Stratford, and then the following week, Strathroy. Now, we want to thank you for joining us as we do every week, and I'm going to bring in Jonesy so that we can pretend that we didn't just record our last episode that you heard yesterday today. So, how are you again, Jonesy?
I'm good. I feel refreshed and ready to go.
Like a whole week has passed, or a whole day even from
is much like the older days of wrestling where they would record back-to-back-to-back shows sometimes, especially in the, oh my God, the WCW 2000 where they were doing Nitro Thunder, and they were doing another one of their show tapings all in the same to save money.
Or even the earlier days of WCW where they would film about 3 months worth and hope that no titles changed or anybody got injured in that time. Craziness, but we are not going to be that crazy and record that many episodes. We're just doing the two back-to-back to catch up on what our fans have missed out on. But like I said, we are here to talk about history. Here's a quick glimpse into what we're looking at. A bunch of different birthdays. Spotlight on Natalya and AJ Styles. And, of course, our events. So without any further ado, let's hit the headlines.
All right, time to butcher some names. 46 years ago, May 28th, 1976, Satoru Sayama makes his professional wrestling debut for New Japan Pro Wrestling against Shoji Tai. Satoru Sayama would be better known as Tiger Mask, which was based on an anime of the same name. He would become the only wrestler to win and hold both the NWA and WWF Junior Heavyweight titles in June of 83 on back-to-back days. After an injury, he would regain both titles again and would shock the world in August of 83, retiring at the age of 25. He became a martial arts trainer before returning to the ring for the Japanese version of the UWF in 84. Post-retirement, Sayama wrote a book on his experiences in the business and pulled back the curtain for a Japanese audience. He founded Shoto, a martial arts discipline, and occasionally competing, sometimes as a trainer, sometimes as a promoter. He founded Real Japan Pro Wrestling in 2005. He has recently retired as recently as June 2016. 21 years ago, May 28th, 2001, Brian Lawler was released after he had been arrested on drug possession charges in Calgary, where Raw's War was taking place that evening. Apparently, Brian decided to cross the border even after the WWF warned its roster about crossing the border with contraband. Not too smart. Also, members of the Hart family were in attendance for Raw that night. Patriarch Stu, oldest son Smith and Bruce, and daughters Diane and Ellie. Martha, the widow of Owen Hart, said it would be disgusting if any member of the family showed up, and this would further drive a wedge between the Hart family and Martha. The main event saw Stone Cold Steve Austin defeat Chris Benoit via the Montreal Screwjob submission to retain the WWF Championship.
Yeah, just going back a slight bit on Brian Lawler, it was fascinating to see Young Rock, that show, and the fact that apparently both Dwayne and Brian Christopher knew each other when they were kids because Rocky Johnson worked for Jerry Lawler. And then when Flex Cabana was working in Memphis before getting called up to the WWF, him and Brian ran into each other again as adults. So, yeah, the connection there. And didn't really hear much from Dwayne when Brian sadly passed away.
Flex Cabana. That's an awesome name. 14 years ago, May 28, 2008, former WCW color analyst Mark Madden was fired from ESPN Radio in Pittsburgh a week after his remarks regarding U.S. Senator Edward Ted Kennedy, who had been recently diagnosed with brain cancer. The words that got him fired: I'm very disappointed to hear that Senator Ted Kennedy of Massachusetts is near death because of a brain tumor. I always hoped Senator Kennedy would live long enough to be assassinated.
Just like his other relatives.
Yikes. 13 years ago, May 28, 2009, Time Warner announces that AOL would be spun off as an independent company, effectively ending the largest merger in American history. The merger, which contributed to the demise of WCW, is considered one of the biggest disasters in the history of American business. The merger had AOL start off at $147 billion and valued at $2 billion when it split from Time Warner. A lot of this had to do with the dot-com bubble bursting. This past April, Warner Media, owned by AT&T, announced a new business merger with Discovery. And that was probably a year ago.
No, that's recent.
Oh, it is recent. Wow. Did I put that in there or did you?
No, I added.
Oh, nice. What this means for the future on AEW on Warner Media stations like TNT and TBS is currently unknown. AEW was not given a platform for presentation at the Media Upfront convention. They were only represented with a graphic about their current time slot. Could we see a repeat of what happened to WCW? Only time will tell. Tag.
And so 38 years ago on May 29th, 1984, WWF tapes All Stars Wrestling from the Agriculture Hall in Allentown, Pennsylvania. What's important about this is that the episode had Cyndi Lauper confront Captain Lou Albano on Piper's Pit about his claims that he managed her career. Lauper would get physical, trying to hit both Captain Lou and Piper with her purse until her real manager and boyfriend at the time, David Wolf, pulled her away. On that same taping, they had the infamous Piper's Pit segment where Piper smashed a coconut over Jimmy Superfly Snuka's head. 36 years ago, on May 30th, 1986, in Houston, Texas, Terry Bam Bam Gordy defeated Hacksaw Jim Duggan in the finals of a one-night tournament to become the first ever Universal Wrestling Federation heavyweight champion. The reason why it's in this section as opposed into the titles changes is because Duggan would suffer a head injury during his semifinal match with Kamala. When Duggan went into the ring post, his head would swell over the next few days to the point where he couldn't close his eye. Duggan's wife made Bill Watts tell her husband to go to the hospital. It turned out Duggan had blood poisoning. And also, regrettably, I have to mention with Duggan is that they did a posting on Facebook or all their social media, should I say, and he is once again battling cancer. So he's looking forward to the chemo and getting through it like he did already before when he was working for WCW. But our thoughts go out to Duggan at this time. 35 years ago on May 30th, 1987, in St. Paul, Minnesota, the Midnight Rockers, Shawn Michaels and Marty Jannetty, made their WWF debut facing current WWF champions, the Hart Foundation. Their first WWF televised bout was a win over Jose Estrada and Jimmy Jack Funk. Their time in WWF would be cut short because of partying too much. Of course, they would return 1 year later and get to stay. I think there was a rumor about them smashing up beer bottles and people wanting to have them eat it, or I don't know. There was a brawl or something that happened that cost them their jobs. Yikes. Either way, they did get to come back. 25 years ago on May 30th, 1997, heavyweight boxing champion of Finland, Tony the Viking Alomar, who had a brief run as WWE's Ludwig Borga in the mid-90s, loses his one and only major mixed martial arts match via submission at UFC 13 in just 56 seconds to an alternative called in on just 3 weeks' notice. His name, future three-time UFC heavyweight and light heavyweight champion Randy Couture. Legal name for Ludwig is Tony Helm, who passed away in January of 2010. He was a Finnish politician, athlete, author, actor, and singer. He was a member of the Finnish parliament from 2003 to 2007. I actually liked Ludwig Borga, but yeah, I guess he wasn't that savory of a guy anyways, because he had a swastika tattooed on him as well. So
yikes.
Could have been doing some white.
Why didn't they use that?
That might have been pushing it.
Oh, come on. I've always wanted to see a wrestler with a Nazi background. Come on.
And he ended Tatanka's undefeated streak with one finger.
Yes, he did.
14 years ago on May 30th, 2008, WWE.com airs the 513th and last episode of Heat. Heat debuted as a six-episode series in the summer of 98. 34 years ago, on May 31st, 1988, WWF Wrestling Challenge taping in Fresno, California, almost a year after being fired for too much party marty, Michaels and Jenny returned to the WWF. They would drop the midnight part of their name and just be known as the Rockers. In their first bout back, they defeated Steve Lombardi and Terry Gibb. On the same show, Bruce Pritchard made his national television debut in WWF as the boisterous red-faced preacher Brother Love, the televangelist inspired by guys like Jimmy Swaggart and Jim Beggar. He actually credits somebody else, I can't think of who it is at the moment, as the more inspirational televangelist than those two. But he was always still known as, with his catchphrase, "I love you." Of course.
I was going to do that.
Okay, sorry. He also did have a lovely t-shirt that I totally agree with that says, "Just because I say I love you doesn't mean I like you."
You know, I would have liked to see them do one where they actually had some choir singers behind him doing the background. I thought that would have been great.
Yeah. And, he's one of those other guys that I thought was older than what he was when he played Brother Love. He was only in his 20s and worked all his teen years in Houston.
Yeah, he looked more like a guy that was in his late 30s, early 40s up there.
Yep. And to finish off some of our headlines, 34 years ago on June 1st, 1988, WWE Superstars taping, Ray Traylor makes his WWF debut as the corrupt prison guard, the Big Boss Man. He would defeat Louis Spicoli, futurely known as Rad Radford. Of course, Boss Man's another guy that I liked as soon as he came in. It's weird. Some of these heels were liked without the cool factor. 10 years ago, on June 2nd, 2012, TNA announces via press conference that the company is introducing its own Hall of Fame at Slammiversary later in the month. The first to be inducted on their 10th anniversary would be The Stinger. And finally, 8 years ago on June 2nd, 2014, on Raw, Batista quits after for a second time, just one day after Evolution was swept out at Payback by The Shield in an elimination tag team match. This left time for the promotion Guardians of the Galaxy to happen, and the Shield implodes as well on the show when Seth Rollins turns on his brothers to join the Authority.
All right. Let's get the sadness over and get the deaths. 13 years ago, May 28, 2009, John Tolis died of kidney failure in Los Angeles, California. He was 78, born September 18, 1930 in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. Both he and his brother would become known as the Canadian Wrecking Crew. Beginning in 1951, they are former WWF United States Tag Team title holders, three versions of the NWA titles, amongst other titles. May 31st, 2020, Danny Havoc would have turned 34. He would die of heart failure. 26 years ago, June 2nd, 1996, Raymond Neal Combs Jr., a.k.a. Ray Combs, host of The Family Feud, was found hung in the closet in Glendale Evidence Medical Center's psychiatric ward in Glendale, California. He was just 40 years old. It's very interesting. Combs was a stand-up comedian who did warm-ups on, for sitcoms, including The Golden Girls and Amen, before he broke through nationally on a guest appearance on The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson in 1986. Definitely sad what happened to him. And if you watched wrestling back in the 90s, you would have seen him. He was guest commentator for the 93 Survivor Series Hart family match against Shawn Michaels and the Knights. Combs would be let go from Family Feud due to ratings and would go to with a syndicate version of the show with Richard Dawson. Would suffer a car accident in 94, rendering him in constant pain. Two of his comedy clubs would close, lost both his home and wife. It got bad. And that should be Combs, not Dawson.
Yep.
Confuse me. I don't know. Anyway, he would be admitted to a psychiatric ward, Glendale Medical Center, and placed on a 72-hour medical man. I'm screwing that up. On a 72 mental observation hold. Unfortunately, he would end his life, and at the time of his death, he did owe over $70,000 in debts. He would leave behind six children. Real sad. And go on YouTube, watch some of his stuff. He on some of the late shows, and seemed like a nice guy. Interesting. Just fell on some hard times.
Yeah, unfortunately, his comedy fell short with the WWE crowd, especially at the Survivor Series. He did, I think, appear also at WrestleMania 8.
Yes.
All right.
For that 10-man tag.
Yeah. And then, there were some days that the wrestlers, WCW and WWF, were on episodes of The Family Feud. And I believe Glow also was on there versus WCW. So.
Oh, yeah. You're right. Yeah, there's there's a lot of interesting. Go back and watch all those old game shows that wrestlers and that would appear on. Good fun. 24 years ago, June 2nd, 1998, Sylvester Ritter, a.k.a. the Junkyard Dog, was killed in an automobile accident in Forest, Mississippi. He was only 45. On June 2nd, 1998, as Ritter returned from his daughter Latoya's high school graduation in Wadesboro, this is pretty much the same story. So, anyways, 19 years ago, June 2nd, 2003, Frederick Kenneth Blassie, aka Classy Freddie Blassie, died of heart and kidney failure in Hartsdale, New York. He was 85.
And he's another guy that actually did look older than what he was. I wouldn't have thought 85. I thought he was creeping closer to 100 by the last time we had seen him on TV.
Yep, Freddie Blassie, he was probably one of the earlier wrestlers to get fame on TV, be in TV shows, and I think he had more TV time than most actors at the time because of being on the wrestling and then the other shows. If I remember, I think I read that somewhere. All right, let's go to birthdays. Sean, you're up.
Yeah, we'll start off with our superstar spotlight. Being on Natalia, Natalia Neidhart, whatever you want to call her. She's a third generation superstar. Born May 27th, 1982, just turned 40. Born in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Debuted in 2000. Trained by Bruce and Ross Hart, and also her future husband at the time, TJ Wilson, and Tokyo Joe. She would end up marrying TJ. And TJ actually goes out of his way to make sure he wishes his fans a happy birthday. So I get a message from him every year, and I asked him to pass along a birthday greeting to Natalia for us, as her birthday was on the 27th. And he gave a little heart emoji acknowledging it. But as you know, she's part of the Hart family. Stu and Helen are her grandparents. Her father is Jim the Anvil Neidhart. Her uncles were Brett and Owen Hart, and also the Bulldog. Cousin Harry Smith and husband Tyson Kidd, TJ Wilson. She's in the Canadian Wrestling Hall of Fame, single and also as part of the Hart family. Stampede Wrestling Woman of the Year in 2005. Number four PWI Top 50 Women in 2011. I believe PWI has expanded their list to include more women. Definitely is at least 100, if not more there. I don't think they've made it to 500 yet because there's not enough. But special to her also is the Guinness Book of World Records. She has the record for most appearances on a pay-per-view for a female WWE wrestler, most matches for a female WWE wrestler, most wins by a female WWE wrestler, and who knows how many more accolades she'll get in that regards, because she's still going strong and can build on those numbers there. As far as championship goes, she's a one-time WWE Divas Champion, one-time WWE SmackDown Women's Champion, one-time WWE Women's Tag Team Championship with Tamina, and two-time Stampede Wrestling Women's Pacific Champion. So that is a look at Natalia Neidhart, and we wish her a lovely and happy birthday.
All right, May 27th, it's a happy 63rd birthday to Eric Aaron Bischoff. He was born in Detroit, Michigan. Before wrestling, he owned a landscape company, worked as a veterinarian assistant, kickboxed professionally, and even ran a butcher shop out of a van. I don't know if I accept that meat, but hey. Eric started his wrestling career journey with Vern Gagne's AWA in their sales department, then quickly became an on-air interviewer and host for their programming in its dying days after their regular announcer, Larry Nelson, was arrested on DUI charges. He would try out for the WWF with no success with interviewing a broom, but landed in WCW at the Great American Bash in 91. He started off announcing their C show, and once Bill Watts resigned from WCW, Bischoff went to TBS executive Bill Shaw and WCW vice president Bob Hugh, and applied for the executive producer job, beating out both longtime Jim Ross and Tony Schiavone, and became the executive vice president of WCW by 94. One of his first moves was to move the TV tapings to Disney MGM Studios in Orlando, Florida. The move got him close to the retired, at the time, wrestler-turned-actor Hulk Hogan, and was able to sign him to a healthy contract. He would also show JR the door. This would be the beginning of a Bischoff runship that would sail mightily for the next 3 years. Of course, Bischoff could only steer the ship for so long, and eventually was let go, and the ship just fucking burned. Okay.
Yeah.
Other birthdays, and then we'll get to the big events. May 28th, Kamala would have turned 72. Also on May 28th, Chaz Ormosh turns 51. May 28th is a happy 36th birthday to Colby Daniel Lopez, a.k.a. Seth Rollins. Before WWE, Lopez as Tyler Black is a former ROH World and Tag Champion, and headed the top heel stable, the Age of the Fall, from 07 to 09.
And, of course, married to Becky Lynch and father to potentially a Next Generation star, Rue.
Oh, yeah. And also on the 28th, Joseph Connors turns 35. May 29th, Pete Gas turns 52. And we'll have more birthdays later in the show, along with our second Superstar Spotlight featuring AJ Styles. All right, Sean.
Yeah, so heading over to some big events. On May 27th, 1994, Triple A presented Triple Mania 2, Part C, from El Torito in Tijuana, Mexico. This was the last of the three-show Triple Mania series for 1994. May 28th, 1996, WWF presented In Your House 8, Beware of Dog 2. As we talked about on the last show, this event was a makeup from the pay-per-view 2 days earlier, being locked out during production with a severe thunderstorm. The home audience got three matches live, in addition to the two matches taped on Sunday night, while the live crowd got a full card, including a WWF Superstars taping. 8 years ago, on May 29th, 2014, WWE presented NXT TakeOver. 7 years ago, on May 31st, 2015, WWE presented Elimination Chamber from Corpus Christi, Texas. 30 years ago, on June 1st, 1992, WWF taped the 300th episode of Superstars of Wrestling from the Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, Ontario, Canada. The episode aired on June 27th. Let's see. 26 years ago, on June 1st, 1996, Antonio Inoki presented the World Wrestling Peace Festival from Los Angeles Sports Arena in Los Angeles, California. Only 5,964 were in attendance in a 17,000-seat arena. This card featured stars from WCW, AAA, New Japan Pro Wrestling, and CMLL. 26 years ago, on June 1st, 1996, ECW presented Fight the Power in Philadelphia. Shane Douglas decided the ECW World TV belt in a separate match, or defended in separate matches, against El Piero Ricano, Don E. Allen, Devin Storm, and Mikey Whipwreck until losing the belt to Pitbull number 2. 14 years ago, on June 1st, 2008, WWE presented One Night Stand from San Diego Sports Arena. And our final event of this week, 8 years ago on June 1st, 2014, WWE presented Payback from the Allstate Arena in Rosemont, Illinois. No titles changed hands. But there were a bunch of other title changes that did happen during this week. And I'll start off some of them, at least on this first sheet, and we'll pass it on to Jonesy. 34 years ago, on May 27th, 1988, from Japan, Owen Hart defeated Hiroshi Haas to win the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. May 27th, 1994, Blue Panther defeated Octagon via forfeit to win the Mexican National Middleweight Championship. 25 years ago, on May 27th, 1997, Kenta Kobayashi and Johnny Ace defeated the Holy Demon Army, Kawada and Tayu, to win the All-Japan Unified World Tag Team Championships. Tag.
All right. See, the ref didn't see the tag, so that's why Sean had to go back out there. 19 years ago, May 27th, 2003, on Raw from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, RVD defeated Eddie Guerrero in a ladder match to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship. Terry Reynolds defeated Stevie Richards to win the WWE Hardcore Championship, only to lose it back to Richards a few seconds later. 56 years ago, May 28th, 1966, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Crusher and Dick the Bruiser defeated Larry Henning and Harley Race to win the AWA World Tag Team Belts. May 28th, 2001, Chris Jericho defeated The Big Show to win the WWF Hardcore Championship, only to lose the title moments later to Rhino. 22 years ago, May 29th, 2000, on Nitro, Kevin Nash forfeited the WCW World Heavyweight Championship and gave it to Ric Flair, stating the belt shouldn't have been stripped from Flair the previous Nitro. The hot potato of a world belt would change hands yet again later in the night as Ric Flair would lose the belt to Jeff Jarrett. This was the 11th world title change in 7 weeks, just further proving that WCW just screwed up everything.
And yet people value the big gold belt.
May 29th, 2000, Too Cool, Grandmaster Sexy, and Scotty Too Hotty defeated Edge and Christian to win the WWF Tag Team Championship. May 29th, 2014, Charlotte defeated Natalya in a tournament final to win the vacated NXT Women's Championship. The title was declared vacant because of Paige holding both NXT and WWE Women's titles. 49 years ago, May 30th, 1973, at an All-Star Wrestling taping in Hamburg, Pennsylvania, Tony Garea and Haystacks Calhoun defeated Professor Tanaka and Mr. Fuji to win the WWF Tag Team Championship. The win ended a 337-day run as Tag Team Champions for Tanaka and Fuji, at the time the longest in company history. The record would stand until Demolition breaks it in 1989 with its 478-day run.
And then the New Day ended up beating that record because of Demolition suing WWE.
Wow, they had it for a long time then, Demolition did. Very good. 41 years ago, May 30th, 1981, in Charlotte, North Carolina, Sweet Ebony Diamond, the mask Rocky Johnson, defeated Greg Valentine to win the NWA TV belt.
Not a very good disguise for Sweet Ebony Diamond.
26 years ago, May 30th, 1996, in Cagas, Puerto Rico, Sean Morley defeated El Bronco to win the World Wrestling Council Television Championship. He would hold the title for nearly 3 years and vacated it while working in the WWF as Val Venus. 22 years ago, May 30th, 2000, at a Thunder taping, Chuck Palumbo and Sean Stasiak defeated Chronic, Brian Clark, and Brian Adams to win the WCW World Tag Belts. 78 years ago, May 31st, 1944, in Mexico City, Mexico, El Santo defeated Tuffy Truesdale in a tournament final to win the Mexican National Middleweight Heavyweight. Oh, man. Yeah, middleweight championship for the third time. 23 years ago, May 31st, 1999, on Nitro from Houston, Texas, Bam Bam Bigelow and Diamond Dust Page defeated Canyon and Saturn, who was subbing for Raven, to win the WCW World Tag Team Championship.
I love when you can substitute somebody for a championship.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
they magically lose.
I think that's fine as long as the other team agrees. Yeah. 18 years ago, May 31st, 2004, on Raw from Montreal, Quebec, Canada, La Resistance, Robert Conway, and Sylvain Grenier defeated Chris Benoit and Edge to win the World Tag Team Championship. Tag!
May 31st, 2015... Ryback defeated King Barrett, R-Truth, Sheamus, Mark Henry, and Dolph Ziggler in an Elimination Chamber match to win the WWE Intercontinental Championship. On June 1st, 2008, Edge defeated The Undertaker in a Tables, Ladders, and Chairs match to win the vacant World Heavyweight Championship. With the loss, Undertaker was forced to leave the WWE, but of course, not for long. 13 years ago on June 1st, from on 2009 on Raw, Kofi Kingston defeated MVP to win the WWE United States Championship. 12 years ago on June 1st, 2010, Wade Barrett wins the first season of NXT, earning himself a WWE Championship match and a future pay-per-view. David Otunga finished second and Justin Gabriel finished third. This season also had Daniel Bryan, the American Dragon, Bryan Danielson, being a rookie with Jericho. Meanwhile, he had probably as much experience, if not more, than Chris Jericho and well, not worldly, I guess, but he did start later.
And Jericho was a star for a long time before Bryan Danielson became a star.
And now they're both together in AEW and fought each other this past Sunday on pay-per-view. Anyways.
Was a decent match?
It was a brawl. It was a shit show.
Oh.
To be honest. 39 years ago on June 2nd, 1983, Hulk Hogan defeated Antonio Inoki by countout to win the International Wrestling Grand Prix Tournament and the NWF Championship. This was a month-long tournament featuring 10 wrestlers, including Killer Khan, Big John Studd, Andre the Giant, Rusher Kimura, El Connect, Enrique Vera, Otto Wands, and Akira Maeda, competing in a round-robin tournament with the top two scorers facing off in a one-on-one final to determine the winner. On the same show, Tiger Mask defeated Kobayashi to win the NWA World Junior Heavyweight Championship. 35 years ago, in Buffalo, New York, the Honky Tonk Man defeated Ricky the Dragon Steamboat to win the WWF Intercontinental Championship. Say what you will about Honky, but he would hold the IC belt longer than anyone else in WWE history to this day with 454 days.
I thought he was a great champion. Maybe not the, you know, a great wrestler and whatnot, but
he made the perfect chicken shit heel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And with that pipsqueak Jimmy Hart by his side, it was gold.
Yep.
18 years ago on June 2nd, 2004, NWA TNA weekly pay-per-view from Nashville, Jeff Jarrett defeated Ron Killings, AJ Styles, Raven, and Chris Harris in a King of the Mountain match to win the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and our final title change of this week. On June 2nd, 2007, 15 years ago, Shimmer would crown their first ever Shimmer champion. In the finals, Sarah Del Rey defeated Lacey to become the first Shimmer champion.
All right, let's go to the Monday Night Wars. All started off with, which was a two-hour edition of Monday Night Raw from Georgia. Sorry, Monday Nitro from Georgia. This was one of the most important Nitros of them all, as Scott Hall first appeared during the second match out in the live crowd. He would be presented in his Razor Ramon character and address the crowd. Then later in the night, he would crash the broadcast booth and declare war on WCW and call out the best three WCW wrestlers. This would be the beginning of the biggest storyline in WCW and change how the WWF competed in the Monday Night Wars. This was the episode that Nitro expanded to 2 hours. Previously, Nitro episodes were only 1 hour. This coincided with the first appearance in Nitro from the Outsiders, the tag team that would eventually form the NWO. And the matches for that edition, the Four Horsemen, Arn Anderson and Ric Flair, with Elizabeth and Woman, defeated the American Males, which was Marcus Alexander Bagwell and Scotty Riggs, and that was 13 minutes. Wow, that's a long match. Steve Dahl versus the Mauler with Colonel Robert Parker ended in a no contest at 5 minutes. Diamond Dallas Page defeated Sergeant Craig Pittman with Teddy Long at 3 minutes. The Giant with Jimmy Hart, who was champion at the time, defeated the Shark to retain the WCW World Heavyweight Belt. And that was a little over 4 minutes. Lex Luger, who is the champion, defeated Max to retain the WCW World Television Championship. And that was 5 minutes and 45 seconds. Bobby Walker defeated Brad Armstrong in 4.5 minutes. Lord Steven Regal with Jeeves defeated Alex Wright over 10 minutes. And Scott Steiner versus Sting ended in double DQ. In a match that lasted a little over 10 minutes. Wow, those matches, a lot of them, you know, decent length matches, especially for TV.
Decent length matches, and well, they were definitely trying to get everybody's attention with the fact that this was their first 2-hour show of Nitro, and with it being live, not surprised. Over on Raw, though, this was probably the other reason why I picked it, not just because it was Scott Hall's debut to do the NWO, but this was also that night in between the infamous Beware Dog show as well, where WWE had to make things up the next day. So they were in Fayetteville, North Carolina, at the Cumberland County Memorial Auditorium. This was the night after the Beware Dog pay-per-view, as I said, and the night before the makeup show. They had a King of the Ring qualifying match, but the Ultimate Warrior fought WWE IC champion Goldust to a double countout in a non-title match when Goldust tried to leave ringside, and he was attacked in the aisle by Warrior. After the bout, Jerry Lawler attempted to retrieve the director's chair from Marlena, but the Warrior grabbed it instead and destroyed it in the ring. WWF Tag Team Champions, the Smoking Guns, who had Sonny in the corner, defeated Skip and Zip in a non-title match when the momentum of a flying body press by Skip put Bart on top for the win. Hillbilly Jim did guest commentary for the bout until he ushered the Godwins, who came ringside midway through the match, to the bout backstage. And this set up him managing the Godwins at that time. There was also another qualifying match for the King of the Ring with Vader, who had Jim Cornette in his corner, pinning Ahmed Johnson after Owen Hart, who did guest commentary for the bout, came off the top with a double axe handle using his arm cast as Ahmed covered Vader following a spine buster in 11 minutes and 20 seconds. Cornette was chased backstage by Ahmed at the 3-minute mark, but he returned late in the contest and was, as his distraction allowed Hart to interfere. After the match, Ahmed was taken backstage on a stretcher where he was eventually revived by Goldust via mouth to mouth. And he freaked out. Moments later, an enraged Ahmed Johnson chased Goldust through the arena trying to seek revenge. This was Ahmed Johnson's first TV loss. And there was also highlights from the blacked out portion of the previous night's pay-per-view that were not televised. And this also featured, as I said earlier, yesterday's episode, it featured Ted DiBiase challenging Savio Vega to face Steve Austin in a match for the Caribbean strap match with DiBiase's career at the stake. DiBiase had actually given his notice to WWF for WCW earlier in the day. They added the match stipulation that if Austin lost, that Ted would leave WWF.
Yeah, I think that helped that that event, having that stipulation put in there. It just worked out really well for history.
Oh, yeah. And DiBiase became basically member number 5, I think, of the NWO. Mm-hmm. 4 or 5. We know Waltman was 6, but...
Oh, there you go. That's also why they call them 6. See, yeah. I thought it was because of 1, 2, 3 added up.
Was no, he was also the 6th member of the NWO. Yeah. As I said, it's a toss-up between DiBiase or Giant as 4 or 5, and then X-Pac was 6.
All right, we're going to move into some birthdays. I'll do some of them, and then I'll give Sean the other half. Birthdays, May 29th, we got Spice, which is a Nitro girl.
My favorite Nitro girl.
Oh, nice. Spice. Turns 49. Brian Kendrick turns 43. Nia Jax turns to 38. Samu of the Islanders, I believe, turns 56. Steve Corino turns 49, and Hornswoggle is 36.
Samu would actually be of the Head Shrinkers.
Ah, that's it. There you go, the Head Shrinkers. May 30th, it's a happy 67th birthday to Ardrian Smith Jr., a.k.a. Jake the Snake Roberts, the son of famed and disgraced 60s wrestler Grizzly Smith.
Roberts had two runs in the WWF. He also wrestled for AAA, WCW, and ECW in the 90s and made appearances for TNA and the 2000s. Roberts is credited as the inventor of the DDT. Roberts would be inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2012.
Yeah, and when he's in good health, which his health is sketchy right now, but when he is in good health, he's hanging out with the guys in AEW.
Nice. Where did I lead off? There it is. May 30th. No Way Jose turns 34. May 31st, Montez Ford turns 32. It's a happy 55th birthday to Ian Richard Hodgkinson, a.k.a. Vampiro. He spent most of the 90s in Mexico wrestling for CMLL, spent some time in the late WCW days, and moved on to the Universal Wrestling Association and in AAA from 2005 and 2013. Yeah, he was the ones that made Nitro at least somewhat watchable when they added him. A little different. He had the decent feud with Stink, and I think he had a feud with Raven as well.
Yeah. If I recall right, he is actually a Canadian from Thunder Bay.
Wow. Nice. June 1st, James Storm turns 45. Alicia Adut turns 27. Also,
another Canadian there.
Sorry?
Another Canadian right there.
Oh, all right. June 1st, also, Billy Buck Busick would have turned 68. June 2nd, it's a happy 41st birthday for Jamie Lynn Zandstar, I guess. Anyways, a.k.a. Velvet Sky. And we'll go to Sean for the birthday spotlight.
Yeah, and that is AJ Styles. He is born June 2nd, 1977, from Jacksonville, North Carolina, trained by Rick Michaels. Debuted in 1998. He worked in WCW, ROH, New Japan, TNA, and of course, currently in the WWF or WWE. That's a mistake on my graphic there. PWA Wrestler of the Decade in 2010s. Number one PWI 500 in 2010. PWA Wrestler of the Year from 2016 to 18. So 3 years consecutive on that one. PWI Most Popular in 2017 and 18. PWI Match of the Year versus Cena at SummerSlam 2016. Baltimore Sun Male Wrestler of the Year and Best In-Ring Moment in 2016. So that was that SummerSlam match. Wrestling Observer Newsletter Wrestler of the Year 2015 and 16. Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame 2017. Rolling Stone Wrestler of the Year in 2016. So that was a huge year for him in 2016. In total, he's had 55 championships from all around the world. Just to name some of them, it includes one WWE Raw Tag Team Championship just recently with Almost, three-time WWE U.S. Champion, one-time WWE Intercontinental Champion, two-time WWE Champion, and he earned a Slammy Award. He has a one-time Ring of Honor Pure Championship and Ring of Honor Tag Team title to his name. And, of course, most of his gold came in TNA. Excuse me. He's a three-time NWA World Champion, four-time NWA World Tag Team Champion, two-time TNA Legends TV Global Champion, two-time TNA World Heavyweight Champion, two-time World Tag Team Champion in TNA, six-time TNA X Division Champion, and he earned 10 TNA year-end awards. And it looks like when he does retire, he will be retiring as a WWE superstar. AEW did want him, but he's re-signed and been doing good so far since leaving with Almost and dropping those belts. He's been now teaming with Finn Balor and Liv Morgan, taking on Judgment Day with Edge, Damian Priest, and what's her name with the woman? I can't think of it at the moment. But yeah, he seems to be in a prominent singles position. Could eventually feud with Finn Balor if they turn him heel. And those, that would be two leaders of the Bullet Club going against each other, and would definitely be, not to be punny, but a phenomenal match between those two. And that is our spotlight on AJ Styles. We got like two more birthdays to go, and we're out of here for this evening.
All right. Well, we both can do this one. Fuck the Lux Express, okay? Lex Luger turned 64.
Yeah.
You know, in a way, I'm surprised they never sold little Lex Expresses, because that wouldn't have been hard to just to get little, you know, Hot Wheels style little bus. Anyways, I can't think of the damn word.
They might have actually done that, Matchbox.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
And our final birthday is Grado, who turns 34. Going back to Lex, unfortunately, I guess, karma is a bitch, and he's thankfully, I guess, reformed, but what he was into before, and he wasn't that great of a wrestler either.
Yeah, he wasn't a great wrestler in the ring, but he definitely had it. Like, he was an entertainer, and he definitely looked the part. So yeah, this even though he's not at the top of my list, he, you know, I did get to see him at the London Gardens take on King Kong Bundy, and he lost, by the way.
Wow. If you want to know more about Lex, though, at least his return to WCW when the Monday Night Wars started, you can go check out 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson, and they cover his first 2 years back in WCW from 95 to 97. And that wraps up our episode.
All right. Thank you to Sean, who compiles all this mess that I send him. He gets all the pictures, puts it all together, looks very nice, and want to thank him for that. So, This Week in Wrestling history is compiled from the vast land of Google, Wikipedia, GatesideSeats.com, and most importantly, from fans and journalists that had front row seats to history. And a big thank you always to our sponsors, one of them being CoolBet, CoolBet.com, and sports book betting and casino games. Stay cool and bet responsibly. And if you would like to be one of our sponsors, please contact us, as we have CoolBet. We also have another one that Sean will tell you about in a second. And we will be having a third coming in very shortly. So if you want to get on that train of great businesses that are helping support us, then give us a call.
Yep, we can always be reached at our Facebook page. That's the easiest way to get to us. Email us at scumbagswrestling@gmail.com or hit up our website, scumbagswrestling.ca. Anybody you want to get in touch with us, we'll give you a platform to advertise your business, just like our friends at Hammerlock Pure Wrestling, bringing back the golden age of professional wrestling at the Job Site Brewing Company in Stratford, Ontario. July 9th, you don't want to miss great family action. Bring your friends, bring your family to the Job Site Brewing Company. $20 a ticket, and you won't be disappointed. And if you're not in the Stratford area, the following week we are in Strathroy at the Portuguese Club on July 16th. So once again, $20 tickets there. And as challenged at the last Strathroy show, Tyson Dukes will take on Brickhouse McMaguire. So you don't want to miss all the great action coming your way from Hammerlock Pure Wrestling. So until then, thank you for joining us. Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, all your outlets for great podcasting action and information. And we'll see you next time. Have a great one.